welcome to Front End Nationwide. This is the Athletic dedicated Blue Jackets podcast. Aaron Portine with you on a Wednesday afternoon. The Blue Jackets have but three games left in the regular season. It's kind of a mixed bag for those of us who love hockey. There's always a desire to see more hockey, but I think there's also an understanding with many people who watch this team that it's time to move on, and a big offseason of change is coming, if you really think about it. New GM's coming. Maybe a new coach is coming. Maybe a new goaltender is coming. I think there's going to be significant moves. How you see and hear the Blue Jackets next year will be different with the retirement of Jeff Rimmer. Curious today, we can talk about whatever you want. You can join us via the text, or you can step to the stage. So yeah, let's talk about whatever you want, but we can also really curious what you want to see done first this offseason. What you think is maybe not the most pressing need, but the first move you would make. I think the first move needs to make a statement. Like the dog is trying to make a statement right now. Thanks for joining us, dear Bella. Duly noted. The Blue Jackets play tomorrow night in Florida. They lost last night in Tampa, 5-2. Listen, they're losing games, and their job is to win games, so that's not good. But the way that they're aligned right now, their lineup is just completely. I mean, come on. Like their first line is no one's first line in the NHL. Justin Danforth moves up there last night with the last minute scratch of Alex Nylander due to an illness or an injury. I think they said lower body injury. Olivier is playing on the third line. That's normally a fourth line player. It's just they are once again ravaged by injury. Let's just be honest here. They were not a competitive team. Some nights competitive, but on the whole, not a competitive team before the injury started. So we can talk about that. We can talk about the bright spots you've seen this year, and there are some of those. I don't think you have to force the jumper to acknowledge that there have been some bright spots. So let's get into the text questions. We've got a caller on stage already, Joseph M. We'll get to you in just a second. So be on alert there. Martin L. says, been asked many times, Ports, but is there any general feeling about Pazzi's status? Any feeling of how he's held in regard or not in the organization with the players? Could an answer be to bring on a Todd McClellan or Dale Hunter as the lead assistant for him? There is no word, no. Is there a feeling? I think the feeling among most people, I think if you took a survey among most people, I think the answer would be they feel like there's going to be a new coach next year. But that is, what does that mean? It's going to be up to the new GM, and it should be. I think it's also going to be up to the new GM to listen to the players, the veteran players, and see what their feelings are as to how the room has operated or how they've been coached this year. That's Boone, that's Corrali, that's Good Branson. There's certainly not a decision that's been made yet, I don't believe. But the new GM's potentially going to want his own guy. And so I think that's only reasonable. And I don't think they've played so well this year that getting a new coach would be out of the question for the new guy. I think it's there. But at the same time, I don't think you can put what's happened this year squarely on the shoulders of Pascal Vincent. That's not fair either. But it is a time of change. And whenever the guy at the top changes, the people underneath him change. Not just the coach. There's going to be a lot of changes within the organization too. Scouts, executives, on and on. You may have seen a TSN report that John Davidson is willing to adjust his title if necessary to bring in the next guy. That has, I think, in that report by Darren Dreger of TSN, the names Jeff Gordon and Ken Holland were mentioned. I would add two more to that. I think Chris McFarland, currently the GM of the Avs, or Bill Zito, currently the GM of the Panthers. I'm not sure. There's a feeling by many people that there's no way either of those guys would leave their jobs. I think both of them have very strong feelings about Columbus, and it might be hard for them to pass on a president's title in addition to the general manager. So that's not a report. That those are examples of what that report from TSN could mean. So Jonathan C. says, who in your estimations is on the roster come opening night this fall? Wow. Well, I think you look at, you know, there's not a ton of guys who are of an age or of a contract status to be easy calls that they're just going to be out the door. I think you're going to keep your RFAs. I don't foresee, they got a lot of RFAs. This new GM's going to step into some heady negotiations, and that'll be something worth seeing too. Or does this organization stick to the bridge deals, or do they commit to players long term? But you've got Marchenko, Sillinger, Texier up, Chinnikov up. Who knows about players like Carson Meyer? Who knows about Alexander Nylander? Brendan Gaunce is UFA. I think he's a player that's valued with the organization as a two-way guy, but he may want to seek greener pastures too. Jake Bean is an RFA. They just don't have UFAs, people. Nick Blankenberg, RFA. Malcolm Subban is a UFA, your fourth string goalie, so not the biggest deal there. So it's going to have to be through trade. And again, I don't rule that out either, but how aggressive is the new guy coming in here? I think there's going to be a lot of familiar faces. At some point, they're going to have to make some tough decisions on these young players. And I don't mean in terms of contracts, and I don't even know that it's the hair yet, but they need to get a full evaluation of them and then decide which pieces fit and which ones don't. And that's a very interesting process. You might say that this is the hard part coming up. I think many people could take a roster with old and underperforming pieces and blow it up, load up draft picks and draft high for two or three years in a row. That's where they're at. Now comes the hard part, keeping them, developing them, fostering them, and figuring out where they fit in the lineup and who is expendable. Not easy questions. With the Line A condo on the market, does that mean he's leaving Columbus or maybe just heading to New Albany? This is from Tim G. Tim, I don't know, and I have asked the question, and I haven't written a word about it because we don't know anything about it. His home's on the market. He could be moving, as you say, to New Albany. He could have found a sweet place somewhere else in Columbus. There's all kinds of condos going up downtown. He could be leaving Columbus. Who knows? I don't know. And so we haven't reported on it just because there's no, the only thing we've said is that his apartment is on the market and that we don't know why. There's no there yet. And I don't wish to speculate. Okay. Joseph M, you are on stage, or is it? Yeah, we also have Jeff in there, but Joseph, you're up now. Joseph, go ahead. You're on front of Nationwide.
Well, Porty, you stole some of my stuff because I was going to talk about the UFA, RFA being the number one thing they need to worry about. But with that, Do you have any indication from any of these players about, you know, their willingness to be with the Blue Jackets long term? You know, I don't want another Artemi Panarin situation, nothing against sure. him, but it was clear that he didn't want to play here long term. So do you right. have any clues on any of these guys, including like Kent Johnson or Adam Fantilli, who I know aren't up, but will yeah, be yeah. soon enough? So
yeah, so here's the situation with those guys. There's a huge difference between UFA and RFA. And Panarin was a UFA, and so that was his call to make. All of these guys, except for the guys I mentioned, Gonson and Subban, and nothing against them, but not foundational pieces of this going forward, you wouldn't think. But they're RFAs, which means the team has the right to match any offer. Now, what's interesting, this team has never gone to arbitration with a player before. They've made it close. They've gotten to the doors of the law offices, but never quite gotten there. Texier has arbitration rights. Marchenko has arbitration rights. Chinnikov, Meyer, Nylander have arbitration rights. Jake Bean has arbitration rights. Nick Blankenberg has restricted arbitration rights. So they have control over these players to an extent. None of that means they want to be here long term or not. But it does mean that it's not entirely up to them just yet. And I'll be honest with you, I have no indication from Fantilli, Johnson. Certainly they're not going to walk over to a newspaper guy or a media guy and say, hey, I don't want to be here, just letting you know. But you don't get those vibes from them. I don't get any of those vibes from them. Now, the winning has to, this needs to start heading toward a North Star here soon. Or no one's going to want to be here, but I don't get the signs. I don't get the indications from guys that they're not wanting to be here now. Kyle L says, do you think the CBJ are looking for a more analytically inclined GM, or do they prefer finding a hockey guy? Well, I think you can be both, right? I think they're looking for a guy that's both. The one thing that they've said is that they're looking for experience. That doesn't mean you cannot be analytically inclined. You almost have to be analytically inclined in today's climate. So I would say that they're looking for both. I don't think it's going to be just a numbers guy. I don't think it's going to be just an old school hockey guy. Those guys are still in the game in certain capacities. I'm not sure they're GMs much anymore. What happens is the GM typically has one area of his career that is a strength. So with Yarmo, it was scouting. Some other guys may be quote unquote analytics. And then along with that person, you're bringing in someone who can supplement them. That makes sense. And so, you know, if a GM has done not many contracts, you may hire a negotiator to come in and have that person join your front office as the guy that hammers out the deals. Really no one's a catch-all for everything. But I think most GMs now, if you're not analytically inclined, it's kind of hard to get a job. Bill G says, is Elvis actually injured or is he suspended? Either way here, have we seen the last of him in a CBJ sweater? Bill, it's kind of sad that we have to ask that, isn't it? Not only the second part, they're both good questions, but the first part about is he really injured? It's just been such a mess of a season there again. I'm told he is injured. He did finish his most recent start, so I'm not sure how he got injured, but we were told he was injured the next day. There are three games to go. I'm not sure if we're going to see Elvis again this season. As for long term, I'll say, like with anything else, my sense is not, but with anything else, the new GM will probably be allowed to make that decision. Certainly a new GM. Nobody wants to go to the owner and say, hey, we're going to buy out a contract. How's your lunch today? Not a pleasant conversation. But if you're the new guy and that's not your contract that you're writing off, I think it's a lot easier. So I'm not sure. We've mentioned this before. There's a flood of goalies hitting the market this summer. I'm not sure Elvis is going to be any easier to trade this summer than he was at the trade deadline because of that. Maybe even more difficult to do. So perhaps a buyout is the most likely. Yeah. So I think that's probably the best way to say it. I won't be surprised if we don't see Elvis play in a Blue Jacket sweater again. I won't be surprised. But that is, we're still a ways away from figuring that out. The follow-up, this is from Jeff G. What Bill G. said. I've been wondering if he's been faking illness, injury to protect his ego. I mean, my God. Think about that. I know other people are wondering it too, Jeff. It's not just you. But I've been told by the team and by his agent to know he is actually injured.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Marcus R. says, hey, Porty, during exit interviews, can you press on the ongoing injuries, illnesses for the team? What's up with Elvis's health? Is this recent stint the front office shutting him down due to internal drama? Can we really blame 3 years of injuries and illness on bad luck? What needs to change? Should the CBJ get rid of these brittle players? You know, Marcus, it's a tough one. And this is now 3 years in a row that they're over 300 man games lost. That is a lot. And obviously it's not as bad as it was last year, but you look at this team now and it's a good AHL team. Yeah. So what is it? Is it how they train? You know, and John Davidson will say, and it's hard to argue this, Boone Jenner gets hit in the face with the puck at net front and breaks his jaw. That's not a player who's not trained enough, right? Adam Fantilli finishes the check. The guy comes down skate first on the back of his leg. There's no, he had protective socks on. Cut resistant socks. Now there's a reason they're not cut proof socks, because all they can do is resist, and he still got injured. But that's not a training issue. That's not, Fantilli's calves aren't in good enough shape, so they got cut. Now I think you can look at the Kent Johnson injury on the faceoff and say, the way that kid is built and the way he's trying to play in the NHL at like 170 pounds. Injuries are going to happen, especially in those areas, in the shoulder area. It's not strong enough to take the heat of a NHL battle. But a lot of these injuries are completely, you know, not training injuries. It's not like everyone's skating around with groin injuries. That was the case a number of years ago. It's not that. I mean, as Davidson further said, Adam Boqvist is sitting on the bench when he gets hit with a puck and is concussed. I mean, you know, that kind of stuff. So, but I don't think it's right to just throw your hands up and say, hey, bad luck. Let's run up the flagpole again. I think everything has to be reconsidered. I think everything will be considered. Add the medical staff, the training staff, to the list of things that will be reevaluated this summer. I don't know if there's enough time to get all this stuff done, but I think everyone should be on alert. Yeah. Chad E. says, do you get the sense that the latest minor Elvis injury is more of a we're probably going to break up this summer, so just take a seat for the rest of the year type of move? Man, this is everywhere, isn't it? Again, I don't get that sense. I understand the suspicion, but no. His agent and the team both say that he is injured. So, off the ice, any names you can throw out that could be replacing Rimmer? What are the chances Bucci would leave ESPN if he had the opportunity? You know, I don't know. That's probably a good question for Booch. He has a sweet gig at ESPN, and now he's getting to do play-by-play. I think there'll be a lot of people interested. I think Bob McGilligan locally, the radio guy, will be given a solid shot at it. I think if they end up making that move, the radio guy in Cleveland is a really bright guy and could easily slot in on the radio side. Tony Brown does a really nice job with the Monsters. I could see them doing that. I don't think this organization really has had an appetite for super aggressive, creative people, the Daryl Rays, the John Buchagrosses of the world. I'm not sure that that's what they want. But maybe that's turning over a new leaf too. I don't know. And some of these guys are a little edgy for this franchise. And, so yeah, that would be a departure for them, but they're going to get a lot of interest because these are plum jobs, much like the GM spot. William R. says, "We've been over this a ton over the season, but why in the world is Yerchek playing 13 minutes versus Tampa? Why wouldn't we want our future on the back end to get exposure to top players like Kucherov and Stamkos? This feels like when he was scratched against Edmonton, another wasted opportunity." William, let me turn. I've got a record player right behind me right now. I'll put myself on as a broken record. Here we go. I don't understand this to the extreme. It does feel as if the emphasis has been on winning that night's game at all costs, at the cost of playing Boone Jenner 26 minutes a night, at the cost of playing Werenski 28 minutes, 25 minutes, 26 minutes, at the cost of not playing the Voronkovs, the Kent Johnsons, the Yerichek's of the world. I'm not all over the map on this. I think I've been pretty consistent. I'm not sold that Yerichek should be in the NHL right now. And if the hockey people here say that he shouldn't be, then go with that. He shouldn't be. But if you don't want to play him because you're afraid he's going to get overwhelmed, then why is he here at all? Why is he here now? I don't mean in the grand sense, like get rid of him. I'm saying if he's not ready for the NHL and you're afraid to play more than 13 minutes, then don't call him up and don't play him 37 minutes or 37 games at the start of the season. And do not tell him to get a place and then send him to the minors. Again, this is not me saying that David Yerichek absolutely has to be an NHL player. I don't believe that. I think you could have made a really strong argument that he spent the whole year at the AHL level, but map that out to him first, not to us, to him first, and go with that. What I find most disappointing about so much this season is, you know, Fantilli was moved to the wing, I believe this is right, before they played. Was it before they played Colorado? He was long gone before. Was he out of the lineup before then? Yeah, he was. He was. So it must have been Edmonton. Oh, it was Edmonton and maybe Pittsburgh where they pulled him out of the lineup and or moved him to wing. And think of the experience that kid could have had that night. Yerichek was not in the lineup against Edmonton. Now the next time he plays Edmonton will be the first time he plays Edmonton. And there's that huge adjustment every defenseman has to make. They're always getting on Yerichek about his gaps. Well, my God, who's the bigger challenge to your gap than Connor McDavid? And now you don't know what that's like. Yeah, I see some of the stuff that they talk about when he plays. Sometimes it doesn't look smooth. It looks a little awkward. Early in the season, he jumped in maybe too much for their liking, too risky. Well, unless the player's just not listening and he's jumping in and not learning when he gets burned and doing it again you know, in a similar fashion, then I think you certainly pull him back, have a talk with him, yada yada. But it just, it feels like this season has been really educational on a couple of fronts. Sillinger leaps to mind. Voronkov a little bit, because now we know he can play at this level. And I don't know that he's in shape, Voronkov, to play more than he's playing, and they don't want to go there publicly with that. So that makes sense. But it does feel like there's been a wasted opportunity here on some nights, especially with Fantilli, Jiříček, and some others, in terms of just exposing them and getting them some rich experience during a season like this. That's really hasn't been about the playoffs since they lost 9 in a row in November. Let me say this too, probably should have started with this near the top. Boone Jenner's been out of the lineup now for several games. He went public with this. This is not me spilling any beans for him and his family. He and his wife went public on Instagram that they've lost their first child before birth. That is an incredibly difficult, sad thing. And my hope is that he and his wife, Maggie, find peace somehow. I don't know how that would be, but somehow through all of this. They seem like strong, wonderful people. I hope that helps carry them through. I know that they have a strong support system around them that can only help. But this is a very difficult thing. And I hope, as much as I enjoy seeing Boone Jenner play, as much as the team likes having him around, he's the heart and soul of this operation, as we've noted many times. I almost hope we don't see him for the final three games and he feels comfortable knowing that he can just be around his family. If he wants to come back and play that last game and needs that for his peace, then by all means. But this is the time for him and his wife and his family to be selfish, I think, and in their approach to living, to live for themselves here in the short term and get better rather than to do anything in a way to appease other people. So peace to the Jenners. Okay, moving on here. Philip A says, we saw some other organizations be very public with announcing who they interviewed for GM. How transparent do you think the CBJ may be when do you expect the GM search news to heat up? Philip, I don't think they're going to be very public at all. I think, I don't know which teams you're talking about, but in some of those cases, they go out of their way to tell the world who in their camp, in their house, they're already in their organization, they're interviewing. That is considered a respectful thing for that person. I don't think we're not going to hear any of that because they're not talking to people inside the building, according to John Davidson. And I don't think we're going to hear the team leak the names at all. I think the names will get out there. Some of the names are probably obvious. But as to when it heats up, my sense is it's going to be after the season. And I'll be honest with you and others, I'm facing a surgery later this month, so I'm not sure how much I'm going to be on it. But we will certainly, as the Athletic continue to cover it, and my absence will be filled by others on staff. And thank you to them in advance already. So. Yeah, my sense is it's going to pick up as soon as the season's over or shortly thereafter. Chad East says, would love to know what JD is planning to do differently in this search compared to the head coach search. What changes has he made in the due diligence process that landed Babcock without an outside firm? Yeah, that's a great question, Chad. And I think there's some surprise in the league that they're not using an outside firm. There are firms that exist that have worked with NHL teams for several years now to find that person. And as noted, the same people whose due diligence led them to hire Mike Babcock, an unmitigated disaster, are the same people that are looking for the GM now. And what, you know, I will say this, they know as well as you know and I know that the process that led them to Mike Babcock was not due diligence. That is not what due diligence looks like. That was call people you've known for years and have them reaffirm your choice. Plain and simple. So that phrase, I think, has been, like many others in the corporate world, has been completely bastardized. So you would hope that the due diligence shown this time is, in fact, more diligent than it was the first time. William R. says, off-ice question, what does your typical workday look like when you are on a road trip? So, William, there are two different kinds of days on a road trip. There are game days and there are non-game days. So, you know, if there, there's almost always a very early morning flight. So let's just look at this road trip. Carolina, Tampa, Florida. You would have flown to Carolina on Sunday morning because the Blue Jackets had a game on Saturday. Sunday morning, they would probably not skate because it's a 5 o'clock game. So if there's availability at the rink that day, it probably would have been 2:30, 2:15 or so. So if you need to speak to players or the coach before the game, you would head over at 2 o'clock and you would be at the rink from then until the end of the game. After the game, you'd write your story. You would get up early Monday and fly to Tampa. If there's practice in Tampa, you would go directly from the airport to the rink. You would watch the morning or the off day practice, talk to people, yada, yada. Collect your things, go back to your hotel room, have the rest of the day to write. Some things would need to be written urgently, some things not. And when you're done writing for the day, then you are free for the night. A lot of times, and I've struggled with this in recent years for health reasons, but a lot of times then you will call your friends in Tampa that you've met through the years, either in the media or otherwise. I've got a friend down there that we always would hook up with, go to dinner, have a night, and then boom. The next day is the morning skate at Tampa. The visiting team's usually on at 11:30. So if you need to get the home team, you head over at 10:30 for them. You stick around for your own guys at 11:30. Then you go back to the room. If you've got something to write that is not game dependent, you write that during the day. And then you go back to the rink probably about 5 o'clock for the 7 o'clock game. And that's kind of the flow of it. There's not usually too many times where there's 2 days off between games on the road. Some days they'll have a completely off day on the road. And if you're not up against it with other stuff to write, you can find something in the area. I mean, one of the things I remember most recently is in Vegas several years ago, a bunch of us went to Death Valley on a day when they had multiple days off before the game and they weren't skating. So you can find some cool stuff to do. You know, Calgary, you're not that far from Banff. Edmonton, you're not that far from Jasper if the weather holds. Sometimes it's fun to go see a junior game, and it's it can even be beneficial if there's a player from the team you cover playing nearby. When I've several times in San Jose, I have found bands that I love that are playing at the Fillmore. And so I would drive from San Jose in a rental car to the Fillmore and saw Social Distortion at the Fillmore, Melissa Etheridge at the Fillmore, seen a few bands at the Fillmore. Always a good time. So, but the cell phone is always on. Yes, so I hope that helps. Sean G says, any pulse on Texier's future with the Blue Jackets? I mean, he's an RFA. I think they probably were expecting a little more from him this year. I was. I think he's been better of late, not consistently better, but better at times lately than he had been early in the season. He's a very interesting player to me because I think he can fit in a lot of different capacities. He's played most recently with Sillinger and Marchenko. Before that, he was playing a lot of third and fourth line. He's kind of a handy, useful toolkit kind of guy. But I'm really looking forward to seeing some development with him. I don't think he's going to go anywhere, nor should he. So he has arbitration rights. If you remember the last year of his contract was simply pushed after he went to Europe for a year. They decided to just push it. So he's an RFA this summer. shouldn't be a difficult contract. Randy O says, I really like Voronkov and his skill for a big man. Any insights or rumors about him returning to the KHL? Randy, I don't think so. He doesn't communicate clearly, directly with the media. So it's I don't pretend to know what's going through his mind, but my sense is that he has come to enjoy this situation after a almost an expected rough start with trying to get adjusted off the ice. I sense that he has more friends on the team now, people that he is feeling closer to. That's a good sign. But, you know, I don't pretend to know what's in his mind. He does have a contract. He is under contract next season for $925,000. So it's not as easy as him just deciding to go to the KHL and play. That would not be a possibility. He's got a contract here, so the Blue Jackets would have to approve that. Joseph S. says, how can $15 million Line A Elvis in cap space, providing little to nothing to a last place Eastern Conference team, continue? Well, Joseph, it can't. It can't. Plain and simple. And I don't think it will. As mentioned, my sense is that if Elvis isn't traded, it'll be bought out this summer. I don't know what becomes of Line A. I echo what I've said before. The first and most important thing is for him to find peace within his own life. Does he still want to play hockey? I think that's a question that many people are wondering. So we'll see where it goes. Two very pivotal stories to follow. Aaron P., this is not me. Any hints or changes or shakeups coming in the business side of the front office? I'm not confident they'll handle the stadium series well enough to get maximum money and PR value from it, as well as marketing the rising stars and keeping NWA experience fresh. Well, Aaron, I don't know that the new GM is going to come in and start shaking up the business office too. Give that time, I guess you would say, but that would be a parallel to the GM, not under the GM's domain. So I don't rule out changes at any level for this organization, but it won't be with the new GM coming in, at least that aspect of it won't. And I will say this, the league handles so much of the stadium series games. This is a league event. So much of the marketing you'll see will be through the league. Certainly the Blue Jackets, they've already started. I think those ads have looked pretty good, actually. There's something to look for. But I like the ads with Jenner. I love the ad I saw the other day with him walking in the ramp to the stadium. That is, if you've ever been in that stadium for a game, even if you're not an Ohio State fan or a college football fan, it's pretty cool to see the band come pouring in down that ramp into a roaring stadium of 108,000 or whatever it is. It's a great visual. I wonder what Boone thought walking in there the first time, because I've been on the field there when the building is empty. I've been on the field when the building is full. It is huge and daunting. It makes you think back to Roman gladiator times. I can only imagine what it's like to be A, good enough to play on that field, and B, on that field playing in that setting. Marcus M. says, is Jody Shelley going national? Jody's gone national a little bit. He's done a lot of stuff with NHL Network. He's done a lot of national games. The man knows what he's doing. I think he could if he wishes to. I think a lot of guys, a lot of guys in this broadcast world have found a very comfortable spot doing both a local team, the majority of their time with a local team, and then on off nights and in certain settings doing national games. Shelley really has a good voice in this game these days, and has worked hard for that and deserves it and does a really good job. And you know what I love is you see a lot of former players who basically end up on the set and just start talking about stuff that they really haven't done boots on the ground to figure out or to talk or to get clarity or to have the person in the know tell them that directly. What I respect about Jody Shelley is you see him in the dressing room on the day of morning skates. He's not in the the pool with all the other reporters throwing out questions. But when everything breaks up, he'll drift over to the player. The players respect him as a for the job that he does, but also as a former player. And he's having conversations with the players, and he's talking to people. So when he goes on the air, this is not just him yammering. I mean, I hear people talk, you hear national people talk all the time about how the Blue Jackets really need to blow it up and have young talent. And you go, guys, they've done that. That's where they're at right now. This is year two of that. You hear people talk about Philadelphia and the Broad Street Bullies. They haven't been that for 20 years. Like, it's these lazy narratives that persist. You don't hear those with Jody Shelley. It's because he's getting in. He's getting his shoes dirty and his throwing his elbows around to get information and to gather things that he can pass on to you, the viewer. So that's what the good ones do. And he is a good one. Kyle S. says, knowing we have a deep prospect pool and likely a high draft coming up, do you think there is a combination of draft picks, prospects, and roster players that could move the needle enough to convince anyone who wins the lottery this year to trade for the number one pick to get Celebrini? Kyle, it's a great idea. I think the ultimate question is, who gets the first pick, and what do they think about Celebrini? If they love Celebrini, but are not completely over, I don't know anybody who wouldn't love Celebrini, but they're not completely overwhelmed, if his size worries them a little bit, whatever, maybe you could pry that from them. I think Columbus is probably positioned better to do that now than they've ever been. So you take a run at it, sure. But if that's the player that they want and they've just been through this dreadful season, there is nothing you could offer them to move them off the puck, nor should they be willing to do that. Nor should they. Jacob B. says, what is a realistic timeline for this team to become a playoff contender? Jacob, great question. Here's what I'll say. I don't know, and nobody can answer that question. But to me, realistic, so you're giving me some elbow room here, I would say don't expect next year. That would be a surprise to me. A pleasant surprise, but a surprise. I think realistic to be a playoff contender, is that how you word? Yes, playoff contender. So that to me, and I hope I'm reading this the right way, it means a contender to make the playoffs, not a playoff team that can win the cup. A contender to make the playoffs. I would surmise that is probably a reach next year, depending upon the moves that they make. More likely the following year. In other words, so when we're talking, let me look at the standings right now to give you what an example. When I'm talking contender right now, I'm saying they are where the Red Wings are, where the Devils are this year, not last. That team in the mid-80s right now that's in the hunt for they're contending for a playoff spot. I don't think next year is out of the question, but that's kind of a tall order when you're at 64 points right now and we're saying you got to get to 84. That's 10 wins. At this point, they've improved 5 points from last year. Now, there's still 3 games to go, but they're, you know, if they win all 3 of those games, not likely, highly unlikely, they would be 11 points better than they were last year. So you're asking them to take another 11-point climb this year. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility, probably shouldn't be expected. So what I'm saying is, to me, 25-26 feels like a season where you would expect this team to be contending and going into the final weeks of the season with still a shot to make the playoffs. Jacob B. Jacob, thanks for the question. Joe S. says, has the GM candidate list gone down? I saw a report saying they had a list of 30 to 40 candidates. Oh, Joe, they got more than that. I would hope they've narrowed it down a little bit by now. How do you feel about Mark Hunter? Jeff Merrick recently mentioned he may be coming to a team soon. So, Joe, we're going to be careful here because to me, a candidate isn't someone who's just put his name in for the job. The Blue Jackets will decide who the candidates are. I think they've got a lot more than 30 to 40 people who have expressed interest, put it that way. But they're not going to do 30 to 40 interviews. They're not. I mean, if you did that, you're going into next October without a GM. This is going to move pretty quickly, or as quickly as it can. A lot of the people they may want to speak to will be engaged with their current clubs, and some of them will be in the playoffs. Meaning they'll have to wait. So now they will not have to wait for Mark Hunter until after the Ontario Hockey League season is done. Currently in charge of the London Knights. I am intrigued by Mark Hunter, very intrigued. I think his time with the Toronto Maple Leafs did not go particularly well. I think he wants another crack at it. I think he's a really, really, really good hockey person. One thing that excites me too, if he is the choice, is I think there's a good chance that a Columbus guy, Misha Donskov, currently a Dallas Stars assistant coach, but very close with Mark Hunter. Mark Hunter kind of gave him his start with the London Knights, Misha Donskov, and they've been very close ever since. I think there's at least a solid shot that Misha Donskov could return to Columbus. I thought they might be hiring Donskov, the Blue Jackets, last summer when he, on his own accord, left the Vegas Golden Knights after they won the Stanley Cup because he wanted a different challenge. He wanted to round out his portfolio. I thought the Blue Jackets might hire him then. I think they were very impressed with him. I don't understand sometimes how organizations work. A lot of them talk about hiring great people and figuring out what to do with them. But knowing that if you're a world-class front office guy, you get that person in the building and you take it from there. I think the feeling with the Blue Jackets is they didn't have a direct spot for him last summer. That's a tough call. So that's something to keep in mind. Merrick knows what he's talking about. Merrick is as plugged in on the junior ranks as anybody. And the podcast is fantastic, by the way. Mark Hunter's definitely a name. I would be shocked if Mark Hunter, I think there's lots of talk that he could get the Edmonton job too. So there's that. But, you know, which is closer to Columbus to London, Columbus or Edmonton? And how important is that to Mark? I think those are two good questions. But that's a name you'll be hearing more about for sure. Joe S. says, are you still keeping track of total line combinations? Where are we at? And is it a franchise record? Well, I cannot tell you, Joseph, if it is a – wait, that's not you, Joseph. Joe S., sorry. If it is a franchise record, because this is not an exercise I have done every year. But they are currently at 89 different line combinations at the start of games. Now, that's even low because there are a couple of games that they only dressed 11 forwards. And so one of the lines that plays has a duplicate forward. I didn't use any of those lines in this because to me that was sort of like exaggerating it and not making it an honest stat. But they're at 89. Last night was the 89th different combination they used, Gaudreau, Voronkov, Danforth. So it's kind of a I'll publish the list when the season ends. Also, I've kept next to it how many games each of these lines have played together. The line that's played together the most this year, you will not be surprised, is the Russian line, 25 games. It's been a while since we've seen them, but 25 games. Next on the list, let's see, that's 25. Next on the list is Jenner with Gaudreau and Roslovic, 17 times. And I think we have two 15s, 42, 486. So Sillinger between Texier and Marchenkov has played 15 games together. And so has Danforth with Kiraly and Olivier. And we have a couple of other double-digit lines in there, but those are the leaders. So 25 games together is the most. That's at the start of games. Let's see. Christopher A., for what it's worth, has sent in my resume for the GM job and have not gotten a response. Christopher, they will let you know, bud. they will let you know. Drew L says, I see teams like New Jersey developing players like Hughes, Heeshear, and Bratt into legitimate stars. Do you think PV is doing enough of the development for your check, KJ, and Sillinger? I will say this. You got to look back at Hughes' first year, Heeshear's first year, and Bratt's first year, because they're a little further along in the process than a lot of these guys are with the Blue Jackets. And frankly, those players with the Devils may have been further along as players than some of the guys that the Blue Jackets are working with right now, although I doubt it with Fantilli. I really like where Sillinger is at. I thought Fantilli had some really, really bright moments. It's a shame that his season was cut short. I don't think we're going to see him the rest of the way. But yeah, it is interesting how teams have gone about this. And New Jersey took their lumps for years, right? They took their lumps for years before it turned around. So, all right, folks, thanks for listening to Front Nationwide. Thanks for all the questions, as always. Thanks for stepping to the stage. Thanks for shooting off your text messages. There's always a lot to talk about with this group. We'll have more next week. We'll do a season-ending wrap-up. It's not going to be the 17th. It's not going to be the day after the season. Maybe it'll be the 18th. Exit interviews for the Blue Jackets have already been scheduled. Sign of a not-great season. April 17th, the players will have their exit interviews and skedaddle off to their off-season points. Also hearing at this late hour that it looks like Gavin Brindley is going to remain at Michigan for another year. At least those are the indications that he's leaning that way, not towards turning pro. So there would have been a chance. They play this weekend in the NCAA Frozen Four. He could join AHL Cleveland after that if he decided to turn pro, but indications are he's leaning towards returning to Michigan. So thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week, probably on Thursday, the 18th. Do appreciate you all. Talk to you soon. Take care.